who isn't here?
They should speak up.
Is Dan here?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. We missed you last week.
I missed being here. I've been flying under the radar for the past week here.
Oh. I hope you didn't hit any bridges.
Nope. Not yet.
Good. And Helen, I heard, and Randy?
Haven't heard Randy.
Oh, have not?
No. Haven't heard Jennifer or Magnus either.
I heard Magnus.
Oh, Magnus, hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
I'm here.
Jennifer, hi.
Hi.
Wow.
And,
I'm Barry Allen. I'm visiting the class.
Yes, yes, Barry. I was just going to ask.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Okay. Where are you from?
New York City.
Really?
Yeah, Manhattan.
Oh.
Huh?
That's where I'm from.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the West Side, West 86th and West End.
Oh, okay, I'm at 125th on the West Side, wintering.
Okay.
Yeah. 125th?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Broadway.
But, West 103rd. No, 101st, sorry.
You used to live at 101st?
Yeah, between West End and Riverside.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. And I used to work at 103rd in Broadway.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm originally from Virginia, so I'm not a northern boy.
What part of Virginia?
The Virginia Beach, the Tidewater area. I grew up in Portsmouth, Virginia.
Holy cows. I grew up in Richmond and spent lots of time in Williamsburg, Virginia Beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Great. I was just talking to my aunt from Richmond, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, Barry, my name is Alan, in case you didn't know.
Oh, yeah. I heard that when you introduced yourself.
Oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
And let's see, who are we missing? Just Randy?
I'm here.
Oh, Randy, hello.
Hi, Alan.
Wonderful to hear you.
Yeah.
And to see you. So are you all lit and ready for blessing your candles?
Yeah.
I didn't know I was...
Well, oh, that's okay, Barry.
Okay.
You don't have to. It's we always have a sun yellow candle burning in class because it absorbs negative vibrations and so forth and puts out good spirit level healing energy.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing.
I have a yellow candle. Where? I usually keep candles, but I bet I don't have. Yellow.
Well, that's okay. No worries.
Oh, I do. Is it okay with a taper candle? That's about all I have.
Is it okay what?
If it's a taper candle.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Great. Do that. And then we will bless them as you will hear. And then you can do it too if you wish. So you all ready? Together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, let's do it. Child
of wonder.
Child of flame. Nourish our spirit. Protect our flame. I don't know if that was garbled for you, Barry, but a child of wonder, child of flame, nourish our spirits and protect our aim.
Okay,
so for day greetings and day endings and exit rituals, which is, of course, part of the Navajo Beauty Way, we were doing... Sky Father and Earth Mother, with compassion, I greet you. So Dan, being that you were flying under radar, what was with compassion like, and how did that help you to fly without getting too many hits?
Well, actually, it did help. I didn't feel an outpouring of compassion, I felt more of a detachment. It was not a feeling of needing to take an action, more a observance of what was going on and a detachment, which I felt better allowed me to understand rather than take an active role in being compassionate.
So, from that point of view, would you say that belief systems would tell you that compassionate is generally active?
Yeah, that's what I, in the past, would have thought compassionate to be.
Sure. But as water...
It just didn't seem to fit.
Right. But when you consider that it is water, and water is absorptive, it's absorptive, then, and it's feminine, meaning that it gathers to it, then could it be that being in that kind of state you're talking about, that it was more nourishing or more useful to your aim than if you had been actively compassionate?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So, just from your own experience, Ben, what might we call actively compassionate to differentiate it?
When I consider being active compassionate, that would be where I would do something, say something, try to alter a situation.
Correct.
And the feeling I had was to not try to alter, just try to understand.
Right. Or appreciate.
Yes.
Okay. There's another word that is useful in that regard called apprehend, which is not the meaning that says to, apprehend a fleeing person, or but apprehend meaning to take in the information or the awareness of something.
That's it.
Right. And, I'm wondering if we consider the fire, the fire-water mix that would correspond, that we were active, I wonder if that might be sympathy.
Could be.
Because I don't know if you all have noticed or not, but often when we're in sympathy, there is a corresponding vibration, like empathic, and then of course you are activated by something outside yourself. Cool. Helen, what was it like for you?
Well, there were elements to it that were similar to Dan's, I think, in the sense of it evoked at times a sense of stillness and more awareness of what was going on outside of me and not just inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
What came up in the world where this sort of plugged in was in my part-time work at hospice, there is a woman who is kind of like the team leader who's arousing or who is radiating a lot of anger. And there's some question about whether she's going to keep her job or not. And we were asked to do reviews on her.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds really useful for a team leader, huh?
Yeah. And so I found myself, when I sat down to write the review, part of me in a way didn't want to work it that way. But then I also felt that I wanted my voice heard around my experience of what was happening. And I was kind of asking myself, how do I bring compassion to this and bring my own truth to the situation? And what I found was that I sort of was compelled to put down positives of the way I think she could be helpful rather than write it from the perspective of what she was doing wrong. So I kind of landed in a place that felt like integrity for me to stay in compassion and yet at the same time address the issue.
Well, you brought up a wonderful subject. Ever since I was age 6, I decided that almost all testing, quizzes, exams, and so forth that go on this planet are ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that they should all be learning experiences and teaching experiences instead of competitive experiences.
Uh-huh.
And so it sounds like you were tapped into that same understanding that, you see, for instance, when we start doing tarot readings, what I'm going to encourage you all to understand about them is that there is no such thing as a negative card, and there's no such thing as a negative situation, or a bad situation, let's call it that way, that everything is how can we use it.
Uh-huh.
So then you're already on that track in what you were seeking to do, because if you say to this person, even though it be indirect, she can improve in these ways. That's certainly indicating where her growth wants to be.
Yeah.
So that to me is really compassionate.
Yeah, it ended up feeling that way. But I really had to sit with it, you know, which is okay. But it was very helpful to have compassion come up at the same time this came up.
Well, I'm glad you sat with it, because that's what magicians do. They don't just sort of blunder ahead. It's you.
Thanks.
Magnus, how about you?
Yes. I don't know what to begin. I think I had my hands full this week. It seemed like the door of compassion in heaven opened up. Some of the things that happened to me this week, I was like, what's going on? The first one was, I think I sometime mentioned something about it when we started on this class. Something happened to me last week, February 18th this year.
Okay.
Yes, and when this thing happened, it kind of built up a level of sentiment that I began to move away from my real personality. I became less compassionate. I began even to build up this hatred. But magically, I should say, this week, it's just like my eyes were opened up. That was after I went back to do the kind of things I used to do. You know, go the distance to be compassionate, even when I'm not supposed to be. Then it dawned on me at the end of the week, yesterday, I said, hey, wait a minute. This was the greeting. Something that seemed to be stuck. This guy was so adamant, he doesn't want to take action, despite the fact that when his colleague sent him emails, he pretended he didn't hear it. Didn't see the email. Only a phone call. Friday, yesterday, he even called me and left a message that he took action. I was surprised. Another thing was that
he took action, you say?
Yes, he took action in my favor.
Oh, in your favor, okay.
Yes, this was something that there has been a lot of pressure on him. For some reason, some of those reasons, I know them. He tended not to care
Okay, okay. But he had a change of heart, you would say?
Yes, he left message. By the time I believe I was still in bed, I don't know what happened. It wasn't within the working period. This was supposed to be his private time. Left the message and said he has taken the fashion. If I don't like it, please, I should give him a call and that he's going to try and call me back.
Okay.
And
you were surprised, you say?
Oh, really? I was surprised. I never thought of it.
You didn't expect him to do that.
Yes.
Right. Now, if looking back, then remember that water is both a carrier, it's expandable, and remember that when we use the water bowl, it was a great communicating tool. So, and remember that also that water reaches a very different level in communication than air, which would only reach mind.
That's correct.
So it would seem from what you're telling us that you're opening yourself to the water levels that you had somehow gotten somewhat away from.
Exactly.
You know, caused a bridge in the emotional body between you and this person. And a mutual agreement or understanding. Is that what you would see?
That is correct.
Well, that's certainly a nice addition to what Helen and Dan have already shared, in that it tells us that compassion, and then again, you are not doing it in an active or fiery sort of way or a driving sort of way, attracts like beingness, or you could say penetrates Earth and therefore attracts what we need in a sense. So that's really good sharing, Magnus.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Jennifer?
I just noticed that there was kind of a exciting force inside. I don't really notice that anything was different in my week. I may have felt more compassion towards me. I really don't know why.
And that doesn't make things different in your week?
Well, in a way, it's uncomfortable.
Because?
I don't know.
Okay. Where is it uncomfortable?
Oh. Well, my sinuses have really loosened up, too. I don't know, but they're not healing or something. And I think I'm giving credit to a lot of that. You know, I'm sick.
But when you say that something is uncomfortable, such as this, can you locate where that discomfort is or where you are aware of it?
It's in the heart area.
Okay, good. Okay. So, when we have not felt a part of ourselves for a long, long time, and then we begin to feel it or be aware of it, could we interpret that as discomfort? Is that possible?
Yeah.
Just because it's unusual or different, we're not accustomed to it. I've heard people in recovery, for instance, say that when they stop drinking or drugging or whatever and start doing things about being in recovery, such as working a 12-step program and so forth, that they begin to experience their emotions a great deal more. Some people are very shocked by that, you know, and they equate that to pain. Only because I don't think we know what else to call it. Mm-hmm. It's different, for sure. I think that's pretty cool. I like that. I have no argument with that, Jennifer. You've been asking all along, how do I heal all of me? And I believe this is part of the answer. Be in compassion. Because that attracts the things that you want. Randy, how about you?
Well, I found that someone like Jennifer, I felt more compassion for myself, and which was good, because a lot of times I don't have a lot of compassion for myself. That's been something that's been difficult for me.
So what would be more typical for you, to be critical?
Yes, to be critical.
Right. And how does yourself enjoy that?
Oh, it enjoys it very much.
But not the critical.
No, not the critical, but the compassion does.
Okay.
Feels better.
Okay. So then, doesn't it bring up sort of a bit of a mystery for us as to why then would we want to be critical?
Well, you know, I don't think it's me that's being critical. I think it's all the tapes that I had growing up where, you know, other people were critical of me.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And I repeat that to myself in order to reinforce what I thought was, I think, love from them, you know.
Exactly. So what a bitter pill, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, Jennifer, does this sound reasonable to you?
Yeah, not let things out of control.
Well, yeah, I mean, and some of us even perhaps would prefer to be critical of ourselves before someone else beats us to the mark. You know, so, but you see, the whole thing is a must-win, can't-win. It bears no fruit. It even withers the tree.
Mm-hmm.
So we're learning a lot here. We're learning a lot. And maybe we don't know in every instance how to stop the judgment or stop the criticalness or stop the offense. But we sure are seeing the truth of it. So that's really cool. Barry, any questions or comments you'd like to make?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty interesting. I was wondering, I just noticed, like, when Jennifer was talking about the I think it was Jennifer, the tightness in her chest.
Right.
And I was wondering, because I noticed I'm feeling that myself just listening to the conversation. I was wondering how many other people were probably having this same sensation in their body. I guess at one point I felt like you were alluding to listening to your body, I guess. I don't know if that's what you were...
Well, listening to everything.
Yeah.
You know, because, say, what this is about is when we go outside and stop and greet the sky and greet the earth,
mm-hmm.
and then we say on top of that, with compassion, I greet you. Every week we do a different greeting, but we always greet, and we always say then that third part, and this week it was with compassion,
mm.
then there is a result, and that's what we're studying.
Mm.
We're studying what is that result,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we're building an inventory of these greetings
mm.
so that we can use them in times of need,
mm.
which is what the Navajo Beauty Way was invented for in the first place.
Mm.
So... Yeah, and the proof of it is that just listening to it, you experience what Jennifer was thinking, you see.
Yeah.
And that's what we were talking about, that compassion is water and forms a bridge.
Mm.
And so right across that bridge, you got her sensations.
And like a sinus thing, too, like a sensation of pressure.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, how do you, but sometimes that's not comfortable to pick up, though, to receive. Like, that's been happening to me a lot lately. Somebody's talking, and all of a sudden I start to feel what they're feeling in their bodies.
Right.
And that's uncomfortable.
Well, okay. But don't make that equation.
Okay.
Don't let yourself go there. In other words, what makes it uncomfortable?
Mm.
Society makes it uncomfortable because it says there's the law of contagion, you know.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what other scripting is involved in that.
Mm.
You don't have to go there. In other words, don't take an experiment or an experience and alter the result.
Mm.
Just accept the result and say, okay, this is what I experienced.
Mm.
Sit with it. And then you'll find a deeper meaning. As soon as your mind gives you a meaning, you cut off all other possible meanings.
Mm.
And so as soon as you give it a definition, as we call it, you've given it a meaning.
Okay.
Just sit with it. Maybe it's not as uncomfortable as you think it is.
Mm.
Okay, you guys. So correct your notes. They may be wrong for next week's Exit Ritual Day Greetings and Dandings because I looked in my notes and it may have been changed, but in my notes it said that the exit ritual was, again, with compassion, but that the day greeting and day endings were walking in joy, and they both should be walking in joy. So the exit ritual should be Sky Father and Earth Mother walking in joy. I greet you.
Alan?
Yeah.
I have a question.
Please.
I've been trying to find an etymological dictionary.
There's one online Stephanie found.
Oh, okay, great. But I was wondering what the etymology of compassion is.
Look it up and see.
Okay.
In a general sort of way, it means communal passion.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
You know, and so that's interesting too, because we said that passion is fire.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is communally shared, it becomes water.
Mm.
And that's the meaning of fire water. I didn't mean to make a pun, but. It's a conversion, you see.
Mm.
Stephanie, can we tell Randy what that website was for the etymological, or you have to let him know? Randy, Stephanie will post it on the Chatamus.
Okay.
Cool. So then, just wanted to see what you all did with your chalices. And if you got it keyed properly and your plate keyed. So anything you did with your chalice plus anything you experienced with the keying of that or your plate that you would like to share, if you have the floor, Dan.
Nothing real special. I got it done. I did not have an opportunity to do much experimenting with anything, though.
Okay. Did you key your plate as well?
Yes, I did.
Wonderful. Have you gotten your tarot deck?
Yes, I did.
And have you had a chance to start keying your cards?
No,
in the natural order and start keying them?
No, I have not done that yet.
Okay. Okay, so that's the point that you're at. You need to put it in natural order.
Right.
Right. And you were not in class, so do I need to go back over that?
No, I used the notes and the CD, and I don't feel like I had any problem at all.
Okay, cool. Well, go ahead with that so that you have plenty of time, you know, so we don't feel rushed as we get towards where we start to do readings. And, as you can, try out your chalice. It has many uses, more of which we'll go through tonight even. So that's cool. I'm glad you got them keyed. That's wonderful. Anything you notice when you keyed as far as the difference between the chalice and the plate, keyed and unkeyed?
I could definitely, not so much with the plate, but I could definitely feel something with the chalice.
Okay, good. Yeah, the plate is a little harder to feel it because you can't put your hand inside of it like you can with the chalice. But when we get down to healing broken bones or projecting a beam off the plate, a pyramid, a cone off the plate, you'll definitely feel it. In fact, it produces more sensation than any of the other tools, really, when you use it, you know, properly. Because you know what that feeling is when broken bones knit of itching and we sort of almost like weaving? You can get that on the plate from the plate immediately. And used properly, you can knit a broken bone in half a minute to a minute. It's a really cool tool. So, Helen, anything you would like, what would you like to share about your chalice, plate, cards, whatever?
Yeah, well, I had to do a lot of keying also. I was behind.
You keyed yourself till your arms turned blue.
Right. I'm keyed. I started just briefly with the cards, with the tarot cards.
Well, we'll go into that. I'll ask you that in just a sec, but anything you want to say about what you keyed your Athami?
Your
chalice and your plate.
And the plate, right.
It's
funny, last week I had the chalice, and while we were having class, I thought maybe we were going to be using it, so it's really strange. I had picked it up from my counter to bring it to my table in my kitchen, and it just broke in half. I didn't knock it against anything, or it just split. So I went out and got another one this week, and was kind of waiting to see if something happened, but nothing like that happened.
How did it split?
I just I picked it up, and a piece of it just fell off.
But what piece? That's what I'm trying to find out.
Oh, part of the bowl.
Part of the bowl?
Uh-huh.
Just separated from the rest of the bowl?
Yeah.
Good. Because it was flawed, and if you hadn't keyed it yet, right?
Right.
Right. Had you have keyed it, it could have presented more problems later on.
Oh. Well, that was helpful of it then.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know. It was just like, well, not using this one, you know.
Exactly.
So I can't say anything about the keying process, really.
Could you tell when it was keyed?
Well, I felt like I felt an energy along my arms.
Okay.
You know, when I held it up there alongside.
Good. Was that with the chalice, the Athami, or which?
It was with the Athami and the chalice.
Okay. A nice way is to stick your hand in the bowl.
Uh-huh.
Your fingers in the bowl.
Oh, okay.
Before and after.
Okay.
Because a lot of times I'm hoping someone knows that sometimes after it's keyed and you put your fingers in the bowl, it feels like your hand's in water.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll have to try that.
Yeah. So, so you've got all three tools keyed, and then you put your deck in natural order.
Right.
And you started keying some cards?
Yeah, I only got to a couple of cards. I'm sorry?
How did that go for you?
Well, I love them. I just asked the kind of neutral questions, you know, where I didn't need answers. But I felt like skyscraper. I can get lost in them in a way, or, you know, they become like animated.
Oh, that happened very quickly?
Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, that's when it windows.
Okay.
Yeah, when it comes alive, however it comes alive for you, that's windowing, and that says it's key to you. And that says then that that card will definitely open the areas in the universe it corresponds to.
Okay.
See, because when you lay the cards out in front of you for a reading, what you've done is actually taken a chunk of the universe and put it right there on the table.
It's a great way of looking at it.
Well, that's the way the cards were designed. And that's why we had you get one of these, the deck you got, because it was designed specifically to do this. You know, it's not about reading the cards. That's not what we're doing. That's the way other people do it, but that's not what we do. We simply draw a picture. It's a matrix, okay? You're creating a matrix that is identical to the big matrix around us, but it is specifically held to the questions that we want to know. Do you see?
Okay.
And then all you're doing is interpreting the picture.
Uh-huh.
Reading the picture.
Uh-huh.
That's all it is.
Wow.
So you did the two of one, three of one?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how long about did it take for them to window for you?
Not long.
Good.
I think I went into the process extremely open to it. I don't know if that makes a difference in terms of attention.
Oh, no, that wouldn't make a difference. Yes, of course that would make a huge difference. Remember Rules of the Road? It says don't bring inside fans that would be doubt or limitation.
Right.
Okay.
Good.
That's great. Magnus, how about what kind of things did you do? Did you get your tools in?
Oh, yes. That was a... excuse me. That was the only thing I was able to do because,
you don't have to tell
last week,
explain. You don't have to explain this. You got that much done this
week. Yes.
So you got your chalice and your plate keys?
Yes, sir.
Good. Have you had a chance to get your tarot deck?
I have not. I was working a lot with compassion this week. I never, you know.
No, that's okay. But do you know how? I mean, do you have a place locally to get them?
I already have one. I had one like more than a year ago.
Oh, you have that same deck?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
The rider.
Yeah, sure.
I had it.
Okay. That's wonderful. So then you can put it in natural order and start keying it on your plate, okay?
Yes.
Good. Good for you. Jennifer.
I keyed my plate and chalice.
Good.
And then I haven't gotten any cards.
You haven't got your cards?
No.
Right. And do you know where locally to get them?
I think there's some injunction at the Barnes & Noble.
That would be so. So there's not a Barnes & Noble here, right?
No.
Is there a big bookstore here, a chain, though?
No.
Somehow I thought there was, but, so there's no place here where you can get to a deck?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, then you might, I guess, have to, I don't know if you could, couldn't you call an order from Barnes & Noble, though?
Yeah, but I should have to go to get parts here pretty soon, so
You have to go anyway for diesel parts?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, yeah, do get started when you can, so we have plenty of time. And Randy?
Well, I keyed my chalice. I haven't keyed my plate yet.
Okay.
Haven't gotten my cards yet, but I'm going to do that this week and get started.
Good, good. Yeah, I think you've got a lot of options in Boulder.
Oh, yeah.
Unity Church is one. Their gift shop, I'm sure, has it. I like supporting them, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They're open during the day.
Oh,
and also, I don't know if you all know, there's a Wednesday night meditation there I used to go to from 7 to 8.
Oh, okay.
It's a guided meditation with, what's his name? Jack Grover.
Jack.
Right.
Yep.
And the gift shop is open after that.
Okay.
But also Barnes & Noble, the bookstore.
Oh, they're tattered cover, lots of places.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
Cool, so.
And, I did do a four-element cleansing.
Oh, good for you. What, tell us about that, how it felt different, say, from just the two elements and so forth.
Well, it just felt more complete.
So you went around first with your fireball.
Yep.
And then with your chalice.
Yep.
So did you charge both of them prior to starting with the fireball? Or did you do the fireball, the whole operation, and come back and charge your chalice and do it?
Let's see. I did my fireball first, and then I did my chalice, but I'm not sure what you mean.
Okay, well, because you have the option of charging both tools, you know, doing the fire and air where you were cast, and then the water and earth where you were cast versus.
Oh, those verses, yeah.
So
I didn't do those verses. I did just the cleanse these rooms and cleanse these walls and cleanse this space.
That's the only verse you use?
That's the only verse I used.
Then you better want to do it again.
Okay.
You do the entire charging verse.
All right. The entire charging.
Oh, absolutely. Always.
Okay.
Always.
All right. I'll do it again.
All of those, see, that's a spell matrix.
Okay.
And it would be sort of like, okay, with the sun candle. If we just said, instead of saying child of wonder, child of flame, nourish our spirits and protect our aim, if you just lit your sun candle and said protect our aim, you have not really done your charge first.
That's true.
So all of those components are essential to the cleaning. Fire and air tells you that you are working those two elements, that you are charging the smoke to clean in those two elements.
Okay.
And let no spell nor adverse purpose last is telling you that it is to get rid of any of those things that are hanging out in the matrix of your home or the building or whatever you're cleansing. The person, the tools, whatever. And what that means is, if you bought a tool that someone put a spell on it, and you do those charge verses, you're going to clear that spell out of it.
Oh.
So these are not just words. These things are put specifically in there to do very specific operations.
All right. Well, thanks. This is good.
Yeah, and when we say, then not in accord with me, it is making it specific to your goals and aims. So, you see, it's not breaking rules of the road. It's not saying something of somebody else's. It's saying, not in accord with me, Randy.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, cleanse these walls and cleanse this space. Far from here, send baneful trace. Get rid of all bane, evil, maliciousness, viciousness, non-useful stuff and its trace as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what works better? Charging the fireball and the chalice and then doing the cleaning, or charging the fireball clean, charge chalice clean?
It doesn't make a lot of difference.
There's not one way or
another. It's a question of your own methodology, because we do a lot of ritual, and we tend to charge both at once. Because you use them fairly consecutively. Once you start your cleaning, you want to go. So we'll generally sit, and you were there, so you remember that probably, that we, I charged the fireball, Stephanie charged the chalice, then we started working the fireball, and after that was done, then we worked with the chalice. But it doesn't make a whole bunch of difference. Cool. Well, I'm glad we brought this up, Randy, because we were able to clear that up for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. No worries. Barry, any questions or comments on any of this?
Huh? Oh, does someone else have something to say?
I can wait till you go.
Oh. I understood the matrix. Can you give me a little bit more breakdown of that word?
Of the matrix?
Yeah, I understood it when you were talking about the cards. I just kind of, maybe I lost it, maybe.
Well, no, it's just the idea that when you do a reading, you are actually accessing energies of the world, of the universe, relative to what each of those cards access.
Mm.
It's not... See, most people think the cards are symbols,
mm-hmm.
meaning that they represent something,
mm-hmm.
but actually a symbol doesn't just represent something, it accesses that.
Mm.
Say, for instance, your name, Barry, is a symbol,
mm-hmm.
and it accesses you. When someone calls that name out, it actually acts, it invokes you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what symbols do.
Mm.
When they are properly keyed. Your name has been properly keyed to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What do you mean by keying?
It means that it is aligned with your energies and purposes.
Okay. Okay.
So that it works for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also keying also can align the energies in the specific tool to work to handle magical energies.
Mm.
So it's a twofold process.
Okay.
It keys the tool and it keys it to you, to here. And Helen, you had a question or comment?
Yeah, I've been reading this book. I don't know if you heard of it, called The Da Vinci Code.
Yes,
somebody mentioned that.
It's kind of a thriller, and I'm really enjoying it. But they had this mention of the tarot in there.
Right.
And what the author said was that originally the tarot was devised as, it was an Italian card game, but it was actually devised as a secret way to pass along ideologies that had been banned by the church.
Correct.
Is that true?
Yeah, we talked about that. Oh, no, we haven't talked about that yet. We will talk about that in the history of the tarot coming up in about two or three classes. That is correct.
Okay.
Actually, the tarot started with the priests, somewhere around 600 A.D., and with the gypsies. And it was used in both arenas, in the church and in the gypsy movement, as a tool of fortune telling, basically, or divination. Probably, even though there's very little still remaining about this that we can research, probably in the church it was used fairly much the way we're going to use it, as a tool of divination, to plan ritual properly.
Hmm.
But then, during the Spanish Inquisition, and even more earlier than that, when the church wanted to maintain its authority, actually starting about 1100, I would say, it wanted to get rid of all competition. So it banned a lot of stuff. And the tarot was one of them.
Mm.
So what the gypsies did was they changed it into a game, a card game. The guys did that way, and they still used it. They eliminated the major arcana because they didn't know how to disguise that and changed it into four suits, made it a card game, and called it the Tarot.
Uh-huh.
That was not the original name.
Oh, okay.
The original name, in fact, I believe, is often put on the crucifix. Anybody know what it was?
No.
Rota.
Say it again?
Rota.
Like R-O-T-A?
Correct.
What does that mean?
The wheel.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the original understanding and meaning of the tarot, which it was the wheel of life.
Hmm.
Which is why the fortune card is still called the Wheel of Fortune.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
It's a fascinating book.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Somebody just mentioned that to me where I was up in the Poconos this weekend about that book.
What did they say about it?
Well, she was just trying to, her husband is a United Methodist minister, and she had been trying to get him to read it, and she just said how much she loved it, and she's read it a long time ago, and I don't remember much more that she had said about it, but she really, really liked the book, and she was very interested, because I was with a natural healer,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, he had sparked a lot of conversation, and and he had done some work on me afterwards, and so she mentioned it for some reason. I guess it's some connection to maybe to what some of the things that he does.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks, Bert. Okay, so let's talk more about uses of the chalice, unless anyone has any questions or things about what we've gone over so far. And some of these things we're going to talk about tonight are magically from way back, and they're pretty out there, in a sense. So don't worry about that. If you never have to deal with capturing thought forms or thought form entities or archetype entities that we're going to talk about here, that's fine. However, if you run across them, you'll know what to do about it. Things called watchers. This goes back actually, well, to a lot of different periods in history. But the whole thing of watchers is something that magicians used to do, sorcerers and so forth, is to build watchers. And they were built through spell matrices, or created by spell matrix. And actually, a lot of the nursery rhymes are actually about that. They are the actual verses, or some of the verses that were used to create these. Like Goosey Goosey Gander, and Little Miss Muffet, and those kind of things. And watchers were either generally insects or animals, replicants. They weren't actual. They weren't real living animals or insects, but they looked just like them. But they were sort of energetic counterparts made of air, fire, water, and earth. Sort of like robotics, if you want. Magical robotics. And the most common ones in today's world would be insects, because they're the easiest to make, and also they're the hardest to spot. And what the sorcerer or magician would do, witch, whatever would do, is to make one of these deals and program it as a spy, as a watcher, and introduce it into the castle or into a nobleman's home. Obviously, you wouldn't bother with peasants or serfs, because who cares, you know? You own them anyway, so. But it was a way to keep tabs on other noble families and other royalties and so forth and so on, or your brother, if that was the kind of mess you were in, where, you know, brother against brother and that sort of thing. As Patrick Swayze would say in Next of Kin. So the watchers would sort of follow people around, and it would be sort of like having a TV camera, or what would you call it, a digital camera. For available, you know, for the person doing the deal. Kind of reminds you in a way of like the witch, and is it the mirror on the wall, in that kind of story, watching through her kettle and so forth, or the mirror and that kind of thing.
Kind of like reality TV.
And actually, I've run into this in a different mode, even more devious, in three or four people that had similar watcher installations in them by extraterrestrials. And they're even more devious because they're non-physical. You can't see them physically. You can't x-ray them. But they're there, and they have devastating effects on the person that it is installed in, physiologically and psycho-emotionally. But if you know that they're there, they're not that difficult to clear. In fact, that's one of the things you can clear with Othami, with electric blue, by sweeping and a few other procedures. Cutting lines also helps and so forth. So it is something to pay attention to. So now, one of the ways you can spot a watcher, if there should be one, is that a lot of times the programs are very difficult. They don't run that well or hold up that well over time. So a lot of times what you'll notice is you'll get a watcher that's like a wasp or a fly or a moth or something like that, but it may be missing some parts, but still acting like as though it were complete. Such as one student was at a Thanksgiving dinner, I believe it was, and they noticed this bee or wasp, it seems to me it was, flew up and landed on the table, but it only had one wing, which would be physiologically impossible were it a live insect. So, and also the behavior of a watcher would be unusual in terms of that of a normal insect, in that they generally follow people around and sort of sit and watch, and they don't sort of seem to be bothered by normal human activity the way insects would be and so forth. So... okay, so say, for instance, you have what you think is a watcher. And what you do is very easy. You take your chalice. Now, one way, of course, would be to hit it with a bolt of water blue. Now, if it's a spirit being mocking up a body then it would get out. It would leave. If it's a watcher, it would not, because being not an actual entity and not having a spirit, electric blue or water blue won't really affect it. So then the next thing you would do is trap it. And your chalice is ideal for that, just in the same way you would trap a physical insect. You just put it down over it. And then you slide a piece of cardboard under, and you've got it in there. And you might put a weight on it or something, or you might have a glass or a cover of some sort, and that's fine. Any of those is fine. Now, what next? Now, if it's a watcher, whatever you do to it will not only affect it, but that which it is tied to, because a watcher is basically a projection. So, if the watcher was put there, say, by a magician or a sorcerer or a trained person of any kind, they're doing what is generally called, this is not an out-of-body thing, it's a projection thing, i.e. so it has an actual attachment to them psychophysically. So being that, whatever you do to it will also affect that which sent it. Unless the person that sent it can let go of the projection and get back, you know, get its the energy back, just disclaim it. And in that case, it'll disappear. So you can take your Athami and shoot little blasts of electric blue through the chalice at it and see. And if the being that sent it is able to let go, it will disappear. It'll break up and disappear. It'll just vanish. But if not, then of course you're sending nice little electric blue zaps back down line to the sender. Another favorite trick is for those who have either smoking supplies, cigarette smoke, or just, you know, your fireball smoke, anything like that, or cedar sticks or what do we call those? Smudge sticks. You can gently lift the cover and blow smoke into the chalice. One of the students did that, had a watcher, and the way they were able to discover who sent it was that they watched all the people they knew over the next several days, and because they kept blowing smoke in for hours. They'd just sit there. Every once they come in, they would just blow smoke in the chalice. It would stick in there for a long time. And then the watcher never disappeared. And then they noticed which of all the people they knew ended up with smoke inhalation problems. And someone did. Actually ended up in the hospital. So, another favorite trick of some that really like to play games with these kind of things, and a lot of people keep spare chalices on hand for this sort of thing. One student took the whole deal, cover and all, wrapped it up in scotch tape really well, put it in a box, padded it, and sent it by water route, by ground, what's called ground surgery, to China, to another friend that was living in China, which meant it was on the high seas for probably about a month or whatever, however long it takes these freighters, because they often go port to port to port around the world before they get to their final destination. And knowing that the person who sent it easily got seasick. And so the person that sent it ended up being seasick for a month or so. So there are all these various techniques that you can use. If it's, for instance, spiders are also fairly common watchers, and but the thing is, if you trap a real spider, it'll live very comfortably in a chalice, even with a cover on it, for a day or more. But a watcher won't.
Alan, what does the, how does the sender receive the information from the watcher? I mean, does the sender feel what's going on or see what's going on? What's it like for them?
Okay. Well, we'll cover that actually quite well in basic shamanism. But do you know what a projection, running a projection is? What people call projecting your astral body, so to speak?
I think I have a general idea.
It's like when people talk about being out of body with a silver cord attached.
Right.
That's called a projection. That's not actually being out of body at all.
Okay.
That's running like a part of your consciousness still attached to you and sending it out.
Okay.
So in that case, you're actually receiving data through mind primarily, okay?
Mind, okay.
And then however mind wants to present it, it can use body as a comm line. So you can get it as thoughts, pictures, sensations, whatever, depending on how you want to receive it or what your skills are. Whereas when we work out of body, we primarily, mind is only secondarily involved. You're using some up to 30 different spirit abilities or spirit senses. It's a whole different operation.
Okay.
So the hazard of a projection is that, like I just mentioned, that you have access to the sender. And you're actually trapping part of the sender unless they know how to let go. Most people don't. But if you're out of body, there is no direct line to your body.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's why when we do our work, we preferably do it out of body than by projection. You can use either. We don't, I mean, from a school standpoint or a class standpoint, we don't care. It's just that you're a lot safer out of body. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And there's no signature out of body. That's another thing. A projection has a signature. You can figure out who it is. Or you can get information about, indirectly, about the sender. Out of body, you can only get whatever information spirit will give.
Okay.
There's no signature.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, a lot of the communications we do with non-human beings out of body, we don't necessarily even tell them we're human.
Uh-huh.
There are some beings who don't care that much for humans. Just like there are some countries in the world that don't care that much for people from the U.S. of A. And so forth. Does that answer that?
Yeah.
I have a question, Alan.
Yeah.
The watchers, are they just there, you know, are they just there to watch us or for harmful purposes?
Yeah. Generally, watchers just watch.
Okay. Because I was trying to relate it somehow to a story I've heard several times when I was a kid about bat flying into a room from nowhere and, you know, cause harm and somebody woke up from sleep and killed it and the witch or whoever sent it died.
Yeah, well, that's a projection. But that's a more operative projection than just a watcher.
Okay.
But it's still a projection. It would be like a watcher, except it's got more of a program to actually do things.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, that's very advanced technology, and most people don't have that kind of technology anymore. So, but you know, thought forms also cause things to happen, right?
It does.
They create an effect, too. So that's a type of projection, too, you know.
That's correct.
Helen, if you're being watched, do you sometimes feel it?
Yeah,
yourself?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, particularly if those of us who are fairly sensitive to it, yeah, you feel like you're being watched.
Okay.
You got it. Okay, so that's one use of the chalice, okay? Now, just along those lines, a chalice is an ideal tool to protect things because it in of itself is a standing omnil or shield. So for small things, jewelry, pendulums, and so forth, small objects, simulacra, whatever, you can store them in your chalice on your plate, on your altar, and it protects them. It's probably good to clean them first before storing them. The other option, particularly if you're going to work with quartz, clear quartz crystals in any way, the best places to store is in a pewter or lead box because that's heavy earth and it will ground out the energies, being that quartz is a specific. In that it has a specific property that, aside from piezoelectric, and part of the reason it's used a lot, like silicon chips and that sort of thing, or in computers, or used to be used in tubes and so forth for earlier forms of radio and TV and so forth, is because of the properties it has and how it has those properties. Is that it pulls energy in through its long axis and radiates it out all along its matrix or core at 90 degrees to the vertical axis or long axis. So when people use quartz crystals to clean people or clear people, they may not be doing such a good service to themselves or others if they don't know how to clean them and keep them clean, because the thing, they will pull anything into them and radiate it back out on everybody around. And just cleaning them with salt water is not adequate. A four-element cleansing plus sweeping with electric blue plus cutting lines around them with electric blue plus a little zap of electric blue is the proper way to clean them, and then you keep them stored in a pewter or lead, and that grounds out any of those energies or prevents further energies from building up. Now, another thing you can do with your chalice as well, and we're going to talk further when we get the cloud work about what's called chalice and plate protectors, where you use the two together, so I won't cover that now, but you can send messages with your chalice exactly the way you did with your wand, but they're a lot stronger because they're not just affecting the mind, they're affecting the emotional body as well, strongly, and of course, that's where you can cause impulsive desire within someone to do what you ask them to do if, you know, they owe you something or they won't call you, won't communicate, and you need to get in touch or need to have some feedback, then the chalice is a good way, much like we did with the water bowl, to send, because you can send a bolt, palm up is the best way, of water blue energy and contain that message in the bowl. just like you did the directions, very much the way you did it with the wand standing facing east, chalice in your right hand held up, cocked, loading the energy into your arm of water blue into the chalice, and then putting the person's face in the chalice, then lowering your arm, palm up, to the south of you, and shooting the message, saying the message, shooting it out with the chalice water being liquid. But a further extension of that is to replicate the water bowl with a physical tool, which is the chalice. So there, you simply fill the chalice with a dark liquid, old coffee, Coca-Cola without the fizz. Fizz doesn't help much. The apple would go flat, root beer, Dr. Pepper, what have you. Dark liquid. Squid ink will do, if you have a pet squid. And you do want a key chalice for this. So if you're doing it, like, this is where sometimes you might want to key an emergency chalice, like we've told you how to do the coffee cup or something in a restaurant, and you're going to have fun scrying. So anyway, you don't have to charge it, though. So you, again, want to sit in the south facing north, and you look into the surface of the dark liquid in the chalice, much exactly the way you did with the water bowl, and start posing your questions, or seeing a person's face there and communicating with them. So you can do all the different operations we did with the water bowl, with the chalice that way. Just remembering not to push too hard, or else you could get a steamy or cloudy surface, or get a headache. And just, you know, allow the pictures to come after you've posed the question or the communication, and taking your time with it and so forth. So that's a good use of the chalice, too. And then lastly, the chalice is a wonderful healing tool. Like the Athami, you can flow both directions. You can use the bowl to flow a beam of water blue into the body for many purposes, or you can turn it around the other way and go down lower in the body and pull excess water out energetically out of the body by using the foot of the chalice towards the person and the bowl pointed away from them and in a downward direction to honor the body flows. And your hands, of course, on the stem in some form or another, not pointing it towards you or anybody else in the room, just flowing the energy out into the air, which is fine. For as far as using a chalice to wash, flow water in, i.e. wash things away, it's really nice. It just think of it like a fire hose, or a water hose, really. And that you can actually wash away, since water moves earth, and water penetrates earth, and water carries earth, you can either topically wash things away, or energetically, interiorly wash things away. Just think about the areas you're in and what they are and so forth and so on. So you don't violate. I wouldn't do a lot of washing with water or energies around the heart area, for instance. And with the lungs, I'd be a little careful. But throughout the digestive system could be very useful. Debris on the skin, dry, scaly skin, any of that could be very useful, where water would be an added appropriate measure. Now, just think it's useful to mention this at this time. You may think that a lot of these operations are not that necessary for yourself we have so many ways we can heal, you know, or apply medicines and so forth. And you know, it may be so that in many respects, as you're studying these things now, these tools don't seem to you like primary healing agencies. However, I urge you to practice these techniques, and I'll tell you why. Because in basic shamanism, we're going to learn how to do what we call body walks, where you actually walk in your own body, or anybody else's for that matter. And if you have practiced these operations with these tools and you know how they work, you can mock up tools and do all this stuff inside your or anybody else's body. You can wash away engrams, you can do all kinds of things. So there are more reasons than you perhaps realize to actually learn and practice these techniques. So a lot of times, like from the outside of the body, it may be not that easy to know exactly what's going on inside, but you walk inside, and even though some of the things may seem somewhat symbolic and your seeing may not be quite the same as with your eyes, still in all, once you get used to being aware of, because you've got 30-some spirit senses to use, what is going on, then it can be very effective to mock up a chalice or a fire hose with water energy, water blue energies, and wash away old whatevers inside the body, inside the lungs, inside bone spurs, on bones, whatever. But they will work doing it from the outside as well. And then the more that we practice it, the more that is so.
So you talk to use it like digestively?
Right.
So like say you eat something and, well, an onion. It doesn't set quite right.
Right.
How would you rinse that on through or whatever?
I would take the chalice and point it like towards the area that is discomfortable, which is probably where it's not digesting well because of lack of enzymes or whatever, or maybe there's irritation in the stomach, and just sort of liquefy the area by just sending in a beam of water blue energy. To sort of wash it on through, so to speak. Particularly in the... This works particularly well in the small and large intestine, colon. There's a little bit of a compromise if you're going to do it in the stomach itself, because the stomach uses a certain amount of fire for digestion, enzymatic action, and so forth. And then as a follow-up, hydrochloric acid and that kind of action, which is fire and water both. So you don't want to totally put out that stomach spleen fire. However, it still could be useful, and that, again, is by experience, how much. And so if any of you all had worked with the water exchange exercise, you probably notice how quickly you get water energy from another person and are able to tell what's going on through your own body as it passes through. It doesn't take very long. And so by the same token, that gives you some sense of how much water flow does one need to do in an area in one's own body to get a result.
Could you get diarrhea if you use too much in your intestines?
It's possible, but I've never had that happen. You know, because it's a little different from physical water.
Oh, okay.
When we were with the Athene, you said like I asked you, could you knock golf stones loose?
Right.
You said, well, it's real important not to go too deep. Is there any kind of that with this?
Well, it's not a question of with golf stones going too deep. It's a question of that you really want to break them down before you move them out.
Yes.
You know, because some people get humongous stones in the gallbladder. And even with herbs, you do the same thing. You do use what's called lithotropics, which are herbs with down stones, before you use moving herbs to move them out. So, by the same token, but you see, if you... Running water energy into the gallbladder when there are stones tends to dissolve them more than to move them. And then when you want to move them, I would sweep with the Asami, with deep red.
Okay.
So, but the idea of it is to... For instance, when you focus the chalice, depending on the shape of the bowl and the size of the bowl of the chalice, there is what's called an actual focal point of energy. And it's different for each chalice. It roughly, for most chalices, would be somewhere between 6 and 8 inches. Which means that you get a parabolic cone-shaped energy beam that comes out of the bowl of the chalice and focuses, concentrates at about, say, 6 to 8 inches from the inside of the bowl of the chalice. And putting your hands around the bowl helps that flow of energy, because then you're flowing energy through your arms and down into the bowl and then shooting it out of the bowl, and so forth. So part of what we're learning to do with the chalice, once you get it keyed and you start doing all these operations, is getting sensitive to its energy so that you, when you use it, you can discern or feel the focal length of your chalice. So that when you're then focusing it down into your or someone's body, you know about where you are. But the interesting thing is that most people can feel it and tell you where you are. So what I do when I start to use it, I use my chalice on somebody just the other day, and I float up and down their spine and in an area where they had scar tissue, which is another great way of getting rid of scar tissue. They had a ton of scar tissue from surgery on their lower back, and they didn't feel a thing. It made me wonder if my chalice has become unkeyed. So I'm going to key it again and then try using it again. But, you know, most people I have found can feel it. When I beam it down into the body, they feel something that feels almost like a sense of water flowing inside of them. Sort of running downhill, so to speak, towards their feet. Or it's sort of a cool breeze. Some people feel it almost like a cool breeze flowing through them. And they can generally tell you, so I ask them, well, how deep do you feel it? About an inch. So that's where I am, about an inch in. Or you can start on the surface, and they'll feel like their skin crawl or cool or something. And you say, okay, so I'm about 8 inches away, and they feel on the surface, so that's where my focal point is. Hmm. And plate has a focal point, too. It's generally longer than the chalice, because it's broader and flatter. But it does take some practice, for sure. But it's worth it, particularly when you get to the plate and you can heal a broken bone in less than a minute. That saves a lot of stuff, I'll tell you. We did it on my foot, and it worked great. My foot is, I mean, what was that, a couple months ago? Yes, but most people would still be in a cast. Was it 8 weeks for a cast, typically? My foot is completely healed. There's no evidence that it ever happened.
It doesn't have to be set?
No. Well, I mean, if it's askew, it does.
Okay.
If it's not out of position, no.
Okay.
But if it is splintered or fragmented, then you would have to set it. Not always manually. There's other ways to do it too, to set things too. But manual is fine too. But that's what a doctor has to do too.
Right.
But you can set it and then fuse it. Like one of my students years ago came with a problem that she'd been to several doctors and they had x-rayed and everything. She had a crack in a bone in her foot, but they couldn't heal it because it had scar tissue up in the crack.
Oh.
So there's no way they couldn't do this, it would not heal. Magically, that was simple. We washed the scar tissue out with the chalice, healed the break with the plate. The whole thing took 10 minutes. She went back and had an x-ray, and they couldn't even find a crack.
That's great.
So, that's pretty much it. Unless you all have further questions or comments, it's really worthwhile to learn how to use these tools as much as you can. And also, it's going to increase your understanding of the tarot significantly.
Alan, I have one question. I don't know if I'm remembering correctly from something you said earlier about we have access to, what was it, 30 spirit sources?
The spirit abilities.
Spirit abilities. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, no, I suppose you're not. This is something we study in basic shamanism.
Okay.
Most people haven't a clue what their spirit abilities are.